Welcome to the SermonCoach.com podcast. I'm your host, Dean Wilson. We're talking today with Dr. David Maines, the executive director of SermonCoach.com. It's our desire to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons. David, you've written a number of books. How comfortable are you with the editing process?
More comfortable than I used to be. At the beginning, it was incredibly painful. What I came to learn after a while was that there is a difference between the spoken word and the printed word. And you could take what was a very good sermon, but when you put it into a book form, it didn't work as well. So there was somebody who was skilled in being able to make that oral copy more readable as printed page. Some editors are good at working with them. Their personalities are easy to get along with. Other editors are crusty and they're very difficult and they can be humiliating to you. But over a period of time, I've learned that there's collaboration that goes on that helps you transfer from one form to another. And I may be strong in one, but it doesn't mean I'm strong in the other. I just read a book. It was James Michener. Michener is a best-selling author. He wrote all kinds of huge books that people read about different parts of the world. He started actually as during the Second World War, writing about the South Pacific, and he wrote of his experiences there. And then Rodgers and Hammerstein took over his small book and made it into South Pacific, the musical, and that propelled him into popular appeal. In fact, I think his first book won the Pulitzer. And he writes in that book about the editing process and how the editor is in many ways as important as the writer. And he details all that he writes, and then he gives over that process to the editors, and then he doesn't pay any attention to it because he knows they're better at it than he is. And then when he reads the copy, he thinks, they have really made me sound good, you know, which is interesting because I think that if you're not used to it at all, you tend to say, they changed it all around and it's not what I wrote originally, you know. So for ministers are in a world where much of what they do is all by themselves. That's not the way most of the world is. If you look at a movie, there's a producer and a director and such in the top levels of that, but it's a collaborative work. All kinds of different individuals are involved in their own areas of expertise, and the guy on top learns that you build the team and you put it together. Maybe that's an extreme television program, not as much as a movie, but it's still collaborative. In fact, Dean, if you get into the political process and you listen to, say, President Obama in a speech, he probably didn't write that speech. Now, my guess is, because you go back into the different presidencies, they had a part in what went on, but they're busy with 1,000 different things, and they basically said, this is what I want to say now, say it for me. And then what they have learned to be is people who let others do the job, and then they have to present it. So they've learned to be good readers off of teleprompters. But that's a collaborative effort too. The church has not gotten into collaboration. And it doesn't mean that you have to have a staff of people working for you as the preacher, but you learn to have other people give you their input. And I've found that the books that I've done are helped immensely by a good editor. So that's something that I value. And when you come into the sermon process, I probably would not get an editor to help me with the sermon process because their expertise is on the printed page, not on the spoken word. But at the same time, I do ask for input all the time from other people. It's just a part of what I have learned is a help to me. So I'm very comfortable with editing, and I'm comfortable with other people having input into the sermons I put together. Long answer to a short question. I'm not even sure what your question was anymore.
No, you answered my question because I asked how comfortable you are with the editing process, and you described how comfortable you are, and you also answered some questions that popped up in my mind as you were talking about how that process works. And the word that keeps coming back to me is the word critique. Mm-hmm. The editing process does have an aspect to it that's polishing, but a real major part of it is critiquing whether or not the person who's reading what you're writing, in case of a book, understands what you're trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
I can see how that would have some application in the sermon process. You want to make sure that what you say to your listeners, the people sitting in the congregation, that they are understanding, that they are, we use the word apprehend, that they are apprehending what you're saying. So let me ask you a multiple choice question. Do you recommend that pastors, and there are four choices here.
Okay.
Number one, attempt to squash the critiquing process.
I'm not going to vote for that one. I know that already.
Number two, maintain a passive attitude of simply being open to the critiquing process. Number three, initiate the critiquing process. Or number four, eventually outgrow the need for the critiquing process. You want me to go through those again?
No, I know which ones. I'll have you read it because I can't remember what you said. But number three is what I recommend. What was that again?
Initiate the critiquing process.
Yes, initiate it. They're the ones to initiate it. And at that point, they will be most comfortable with it. But it's a hard thing to get them to initiate it. Okay. And I also like the number four. That was get used to it so you outgrow it. Is that what it was?
Yeah, it says outgrow the need for it, but you probably don't ever do that.
No,
do you?
You don't, although you do, you learn a huge amount in the editing process or the critiquing process to the degree that you don't make the same mistakes over and over again, or you learn that the way you say something may not communicate as well to somebody who has a different personality type than you are. So you're learning that these are my strengths, but I also have to play to the strengths of these other people. So all of those are important. I think that I use the editing process far less now than I used to. It's not because I don't value it. It's just I've learned a lot of lessons from it. So you grow from the editing experience in a way that's very helpful. So yeah, I like four, but I don't think you ever come to the place where you are totally on your own.
So you're going to stick with three, where you're basically saying that you would recommend that pastors initiate the critiquing process. So then let me ask you, how do you think most pastors would answer my multiple choice question?
I need to have you go through all four of them again so I
sure.
get them in my mind, okay?
Well, number one is squash the critiquing process or attempt to. Number two is maintain a
passive. Let me answer them as you go
okay,
along. I don't think most people, okay, they probably wouldn't do that, although they might. Some might, okay, but probably wouldn't squash it.
Yeah, see, to me, the critiquing process probably exists whether the pastor is aware of it or not, because people are going to talk about the sermon.
Right, right.
Or at least about the pastor's delivery of the
mm-hmm,
sermon.
Yeah.
So to attempt to squash that and to say that you don't dare talk about what I'm preaching, that's pure silliness.
Yeah, you want them to talk about what you're preaching, right?
Yeah, but if you attempted to do it because you didn't like any negative aspect, then that's going to get you in more trouble than just...
And you lose out on the value of the whole collaborative thing. Yeah, okay. Go ahead. Number two.
Yeah, number two is maintain a passive attitude of being open to the critiquing process, but it's passive.
Uh-huh. You're just okay. Number three.
Number three is the one we chose. Initiate the critiquing process.
There aren't too many pastors that do that. A lot do, but not nearly as many as you would want. Okay, number four.
And number four is eventually outgrow the need, and we've already discussed that.
Yeah, okay. So. I would say that I would add a different category, which is remain oblivious to the value of the critiquing process. That's probably where most are. They are so used to doing it on their own that they just are oblivious to the possibility of other people being involved in that process. So that's where I would put most of them.
Mm-hmm. If I could make a comment here about the editing process, it is very daunting for many people, particularly if they develop an extremely passionate ownership of the words they've written mm-hmm. and the way that they write those words. As you know, I was a writing major in college, and one of the things that our writing professor, who happened to have been the former editor of Moody Monthly Magazine, Al Campbell, and also a drama writer for WMBI many years ago, but as he was teaching us, he said, the one thing I'm going to do in the first 3 months of this class is I'm going to drive out of you the idea that editing is bad and that you don't want your words tampered with, because here's what we're going to do. You're going to turn something in every class, and every class I'm going to edit it, just to get you used to the idea that every good writer is edited. There's not a single book published in the normal publishing process that isn't edited. The only way you can get a book published that isn't edited is if you self-publish. So the editing process, you have to get over this idea that these are your precious words, your precious ideas. No one dare tamper with them. And it would seem to me that that would apply in the preaching process.
That was
too.
A huge learning curve then for the class, probably.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Devastating the first time that you tried to craft something and you thought, boy, I nailed this, and it comes back and he used the traditional blue pencil and it's blue penciled just everywhere all over it.
You know what, Dean? It's going to be edited whether you want it to or not, because the public will edit it. I mean, if you publish the book and nobody reads it, that's an editing process. So the last book I put together, which has still not been published, I sent it out to numbers of people. And I said, tell me what you think and what you would do to change it. And I knew as soon as I started getting feedback that this was not a good book. In fact, one guy said, I've read a lot of your books. I love them. This is the worst thing you've ever written. I saved his letter. And I wrote him back and said, thank you. That's exactly what I wanted you to do. And some of the comments you made show me why it's flawed. So I had a flawed book. Now, fortunately, I wrote those letters to those people because I found that it was flawed prior to all the money going into putting the book together through self-publishing. If I'd gone that route, I couldn't get any publisher to pick it up. But it was flawed, and it's going to get edited, if nothing else, just by the general population not buying it. It would be very rare that you did it totally yourself and it just became a huge hit. That just is not the way it is. And yet it's the way still church, for the most part, is done. And part of the reason is your teacher was right on. Editing is a painful process to the person just becoming a part of it, because you work hard on something, and especially when you're trying to represent what God is saying, and then somebody's saying that's not the way to do it. It is incredibly painful. I remember a fellow asked me if I would listen. He was going overseas to do a workshop, and he said, would you listen to what I'm going to present? And I said, I'd be happy to do that. Would you want me to listen, or do you want me to critique it, or what do you want? He said, no, I want you to tell me what you think. And I told him what I thought, and it just was incredibly painful for him. And yet, at the same time, he's learned the value of that, and he's becoming a very good communicator. In fact, the funny thing was, when I left to come here, you're in Erie, Pennsylvania, so it makes sense to a listener, and I live in Chicago. I took the train out here. I had an email from him saying, would you mind if the people at your office would go through the editing process on these things that I've written, because I'm not very good at that. I thought, you know, this guy's come a long, long way. His ideas are wonderful. His ability to write those ideas are not as good, but an editor will make them good. So it's just, and then how to get that into the church so people who do their sermons all on their own somehow will open themselves to that. That's what the big thing is.
Yeah, the idea of collaboration. There's no shame whatsoever in collaborating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In fact, of late, I've noticed a number of books I've read, the author is praising the editor because that author has come to realize the value that the editor has added to the manuscript.
Yes. Yeah.
And likewise in a sermon, if the objective of my sermon is to help my people in their spiritual formation so that they will begin to experience daily life transformation through the power of the Holy Spirit, then whatever I'm going to say to them, I want it to be critiqued against where those people are. And the best way to do that is to initiate, as our number three said, that critiquing process.
Yes.
What can you say that might change a given pastor's mind to make him or her open to what this sermon critiquing process is calling for?
I would say, go back and start over on this podcast and listen to it a second time, because I think we've said the very things that are there. What you get used to the editing process. It's painful. You know, it's like anything else. You have to get used to it, but then you realize this person's on my team. And this person is trying to help. This person isn't God. I may be right in certain things, but I'm also saying that individual's experience I'm benefiting from. So I want to hear what that person has to say. And I'm going to do my best not to be defensive. It's the same thing your teacher was saying to the class. Because I worked hard on it doesn't mean necessarily it's the best writing that's ever been done in the history of the world, you know. So I'm going to learn and I'm going to get better.
One of the things that we have on our Sermon Coach podcast, if you have not listened to them in order and have landed on this one, if you go back through, you'll find we've done a number of podcasts on getting feedback, different ways of doing that, and so forth, that could be very helpful to you. We're certainly glad, though, that you joined us for this conversation and our time together today, and we invite you to visit our website, as we always do, sermoncoach.com. That's sermon-coach.com. We have many resources there to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons. And as we always do, we invite you to join us for our next sermoncoach.com podcast.